Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dr. Walter Dean. This is a show called Getting It Done, and I am your host giving a presentation on superhuman geniuses. Only human. Most of you don't ever hear about them until they're either dead or died or something phenomenal has will happen. And therefore, that's why we hear about them. Or they might have been in history during the period called the period back during the time when there was artists every place and music everywhere and all kinds of things were being created. But today, we're going to check out some people who maybe you've heard of and maybe you haven't. And so they're called super geniuses, only human. So let's listen up and get an earful about some people we didn't know anything about.
The teenage art prodigy whose gift has become a million-dollar business. The real Blaine Man with the biggest factual recall in the world. Child scientist who passed O-level chemistry, aged 7. The unemployed accountant with the record-breaking memory. And the 10-year-old music prodigy ready to hit the international stage. 5 people, 5 extraordinary talents, 5 very different lives.
Me and God are both in control of everything.
I am absolutely completely flat broke at the moment.
I don't like the meaning of child prodigy.
That's a very fun thing.
You don't have to be handicapped to be different. Everybody's different.
Welcome to the world of genius. To some, genius is an arbitrary label. The strict definition is an outstanding artistic or intellectual ability. In short, extreme talent. 13-year-old Archiana Kromerick fits the bill perfectly, and she has a unique claim behind her gift.
The earliest memory I can recall is probably when I was around 4.5 or 4 years old. One day I started having these very amazing and mysterious visions. The voice was following me and guiding me through these galaxies. And I asked him, you know, who are you? And I started calling him God.
Archiana is an art prodigy from Idaho who claims that God told her to paint. And for 9 years, she hasn't stopped.
I like to say me and God are both in control of everything. Okay. So he tells me an idea, and I could just take that idea and make it better and polish it better and just put it into paints. So he's like my personal teacher, my tutor.
She was 4 years old when I knew there was something special about her because she was describing a lot of new things on spiritual matters. And also she started drawing exceptionally well.
Archiana developed an intense interest in sketching. By 5 years old, she was already drawing at a level way beyond her years.
Myself, I thought she was dreaming. I thought there was something made out of an imagination. But when she started describing it more and more, it became apparent that this was actually something that did happen.
By 8, Archiana was painting portraits on giant canvases.
It kind of took me aback because we never read the Bible, and we didn't have any kind of spiritual connection.
With no artists in her family, she was completely self-taught.
This is actually one of my absolutely favorite and most memorable paintings. This is called The Prince of Peace. I painted this when I was 8 years old with oils. many, many artists all around the world. They always ask me, so how did you do this and how did you do that? And I was like, I don't know. I just did it. It's very complicated for, a child to explain what they did. The only way they can explain is through, painting or through their creativity.
Described by art critics as a phenomenal talent, she has now produced more than 100 paintings, ranging from realist portraits to fantastic landscapes and the natural world. They can each take anywhere from 15 to 300 hours to complete. Akiana's genius could be explained by sheer hard work. Homeschooled, she gets up at 4 a.m. 6 days a week and paints for up to 5 hours a day.
Sometimes there are days, sometimes when she's finishing up a painting, she might paint for 12, 14 hours. And I would ask her to take breaks and have something to eat or drink, and sometimes she would refuse.
Akiana only studies the subjects she enjoys.
She loves printing, publishing her books and poetry and art, and that's what she loves doing and her do all day long. I don't ask her to ever do math. If critics say, no wonder she's a genius because she's devoting all her time for art, then it would be a better place in the world that there would be more people who are interested in focusing their energy to the fields that they are interested in.
While some geniuses use their talents to create a feast for the eyes, others may find that their unique skills are not quite so useful. Ben Pridmore, an unemployed accountant from Derby, is perhaps an unlikely genius. But on today's shopping trip, he set himself a challenge. Ben is
good grammar and spelling are important, but if you want to write essays that inspire, messages that forge brighter connections, and emails that get the job done, you need to think about more than just grammar and spelling. This sentence is grammatically correct.
Going to attempt to remember the 13-digit barcode of every item in his basket. This means memorizing the order of 130 digits in just 5 minutes. Most of us can only remember up to 7 new numbers. Time for Ben to see how far he can go.
Bacon, 5000192. 0141 187.
Yep, right.
Fake
pie.
Fake pie. That's 5000192 264 360.
Yeah.
Ben is the UK memory champion and a world record breaker.
Held a record for memorising the most packs of cards in an hour, 27 packs. And also for binary digits, that's ones and zeros, I held a record for memorising the most of those in 30 minutes, 4,140 digits.
Garlic bread?
That's 5000192 043 774.
Yep, right.
Billy, it's only since discovering this hobby of mine that I've excelled at anything, I suppose.
Sweet.
5010 317 040 526.
Yep, right. How do you do it? I remember it all.
I turn the numbers into pictures. We show that lemons here were a lemon being fed to a Sasquatch, which is wearing a plastic mac, concealing a pack of sausages and a leg.
How do you remember the numbers by that?
It's practice. People are either completely nonplussed by it or they think it's extremely cool. It's sort of about a 50-50 split.
I think it's wicked.
That is amazing.
Yeah. I can't even remember
Mary shopping
this Sunday.
I'm one of the few people who find this kind of thing really fun.
Did you tell him your birthday?
07/06/1980.
It's a Sunday, and this year it's a Sunday. You retire in 2045 on a Thursday.
You'll be 65 in 2045.
Fantastic.
In Salt Lake City, Utah, everyone knows 56-year-old genius Kim Peek.
April 12th, 2006.
So Wednesday, and she'll be 2 years old on Saturday.
And when can she retire?
Good little girl.
When are you going to let her retire?
I'll hold her out until 2071 on Sunday.
Known by many as the real Rain Man, Kim was the inspiration for Dustin Hoffman's character in the Oscar-winning film of the same name. Brain damage since birth and a rare condition known as Savant syndrome have somehow given Kim an ability to memorize facts and information that is without equal.
Savant syndrome is a rare but spectacular condition in which somebody with a developmental disability, such as autism, has some spectacular island of genius that stands in stark contrast to overall handicap.
For years, doctors have tried to fathom Kim's spectacular brain.
I'm just going to ask you some general questions. Can I do that?
Yes.
Okay.
Today, it's the turn of the world's leading expert on Savant syndrome, Dr. Darrell Trafford.
When did President Truman remove General MacArthur from his command?
April 11, 1951.
When did Hong Kong return from British colonial rule to Chinese
July,
control?
July 1, 1997.
When did Saigon fall to North Vietnam?
April 29, 1975.
When Kim was 9 months old, the medical world said he would never walk, talk, or be able to learn. Proving experts wrong, he is now believed to have the greatest factual memory in the world, memorizing 98% of everything he reads.
I keep thinking that pretty soon the memoryful sign has to come up like it does on a computer, but it doesn't. He continues to absorb, and not only absorb, but also recall. What day was Easter this year? What was the day?
It was March 23rd, and we won't see another one this early again until 2160.
And we won't see it. When is the last time that we saw
it? 1913.
And we don't see it.
You folks should remember.
So how many years before the next?
152 years.
What year will that be then?
2160.
It's believed Kim's talent may be partly down to the fact that his brain is wired in a completely different way from the rest of us. Since birth, Kim's corpus callosum, the white matter that carries vital connections between the left and right halves of the brain, has been completely missing. But somehow, Kim's brain has managed to rewire itself in a unique way. This could explain his extraordinary genius.
Now, what is the earliest that Easter has ever fallen?
1761, 1818, 2274.
How do you figure those things out, Kim? How do you do it?
By looking at my own heart and my own mind.
Kim, like most savants, doesn't explain how they do it. Kim, how do you remember all that stuff?
I just know a lot about it.
And they don't really explain their methodology. And I think in reality, savants are not aware of what that process is.
Every time I look at him and I, when I see it, it is, it blows me away.
Music is everything for 10-year-old Ariel Lanyi, a child prodigy from Israel. Ariel is more than just a pianist. He's a composer, too.
On
this could be an intro, and then there could be a total.
This wasn't there before?
No, that's what I want to write now. So first of all, I want to jot down the intro.
Okay.
Before we start anything.
Do you have a subject? Yeah, a subject.
I'm going to do my Opus 8, Opus 9, and Opus 10, so I'm going to work on Opus 6, Opus 7. I don't have to do so. Then I'll work on Opus 8, then on Opus 9, and then on Opus 10.
His achievements are beyond, far, far beyond of any most gifted child that I've known. The question was, why do you take criticism from your teachers and not from your parents?
And not from your mother.
And not from your father either.
Well, because my teachers are way smarter.
That's nice.
Parents Gabby and Olga have raised their son in a home dominated by music. Ariel was destined to be a pianist right from the off.
We were negotiating for a piano when Olga was pregnant with Ariel, and she said, "Well, why are you so anxious about it? What's the big deal? Is I going to come back home from the hospital and start taking piano lessons?" And I said, "No, but I don't want to bring the child back from the hospital into a home that doesn't have a piano."
Neither Gabby nor Olga could play the piano. It was for one person only, their newborn child.
When he was born, he started listening to music right from the beginning because there was a tape that his father prepared for the occasion. And from then on, he was listening to music almost 24 hours a day. There is a theory that very young children can be taught anything. They don't have to be born that way. But the earlier you start the education, the more you'll be able to achieve.
It soon became apparent that the theory was working.
He was less than three, just a little less than three, and we were driving in a car, and he was sitting in the back, and we were listening to the radio, and it was Beethoven's second piano concerto, which I recognized, but I don't know the key, and I didn't have the CD, so I told him this is piano concerto by Beethoven. And I said, "Ian," and I didn't have the answer because I didn't have the CD to look at, right? And obviously I cannot tell. So he says, "In B flat major." And I looked in the mirror and I said, "Are you sure?" And he said, "Oh yeah." So needless to say, as soon as we got home, I take out the CD and I look at it, and it's in B flat major.
By five, Ariel had already taught himself to play the piano and started taking lessons. By seven, he was playing classical concerts with an orchestra of adults.
In a way, we created it to some degree by exposing him early on. And a little baby doesn't have many choices. So he just lies on his back, and you play Bach, and you play Bartok, and he listens.
Ariel is now firmly on the path for a life of music. But although showing a talent way beyond his years, he's wary of being labeled.
I don't like the meaning of child prodigy. Because child prodigy is basically someone who can play fast. And not more than that. Not understanding music, just playing fast.
And how are you different?
Because I understand the music, I analyze it.
Are you a pianist or a musician?
A musician.
And are you a genius?
Not yet. I will be one day, but not yet.
While Ariel developed his gift from an early age, others find greatness much later in life. But it doesn't always reap rewards. Ben Pridmore started out on the path to genius in his mid-20s when he began training himself to memorize decks of cards.
I held the record for memorizing a pack of cards in the quickest possible time, 26.28 seconds.
From just a single glance, Ben is able to recall every number and every suit in the exact order in which he saw them.
Magic.
Six of spades. Queen of hearts. Queen of diamonds. Eight of spades.
Something strange is happening in stores these days. Oh, thank you.
Ace of hearts. No, ace of diamonds. Never mind. Queen of clubs.
Ben is in training.
Five of clubs.
In just 2 days, he is going to push himself to the limit
eight
and attempt
diamonds.
To smash his own world record.
Eight of Nine of Spades, King of Hearts, and Three of Diamonds.
Ben's genius is not simply in remembering playing cards, but in the elaborate mental process he uses to do it.
I have an image in my head of a person or an object for each pair of two cards, which comes to a total of 2,704 possible images. So, for example, this pack of cards starts with the Seven of Spades, King of Spades, which is a pack of seeds, growing into Two of Hearts, Five of Spades, which is Marty Pello, out of Wet, 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 and Five of Hearts, King of Clubs, which is Elmer Fudd.
Okay, music progression time starts now.
The key to Ben's memory genius is that he uses a different part of his brain to store new information compared to the rest of us. To remember cards, most of us would use our working memory. But this can only store up to 7 new pieces of information, such as a phone number. This information is only held here for a few seconds before it's forgotten. But Ben can link any sequence of numbers and cards with images that he has permanently stored in his long-term memory. This system means that in the UK memory world, he reigns supreme.
It's a real community, the memory championship people. We all get on well. We hang out outside competitions. We sit around talking in pubs about our systems, sounding like a terrible bunch of nerds. Well, we are a terrible bunch of nerds, let's be honest about it.
But being a memory giant hasn't translated into financial success. 2 years ago, Ben gave up a career in accountancy to focus on his talent. Now, he's struggling.
I am absolutely, completely flat broke at the moment. I've got no money at all. I've got less than no money. I've got loans and things. So I am actually quite desperate to get back to work at the moment. And I'm struggling to find a permanent job in accountancy. People tend to assume I'm a naturally brilliant person, which I deny absolutely. I'm a bit of a sicko, really, in a lot of ways. I just have an interesting hobby, possibly because I've got too much time on my hands.
Thirteen-year-old art prodigy Archiana Kromerick absolutely believes that her God-given talent is behind her extraordinary success. Today, at a local gallery selling prints of her work, she has come for a meet and greet with some of her fans.
Have you ever had any visions of heaven?
Yes, actually, for a couple years since I was 4 to 7 years old, I had constantly visions of heaven, and I use those visions and I paint them.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, your age and you're already, you know, so established in this industry, you know, I look up to you.
Thank you. That's a very inspiration to me. Thank you.
She's really been in touch with another dimension that is not common to our normal human experience.
It's definitely projected. She's like a projector from God onto a canvas.
An artist since the age of 4, this is no mere hobby for Archiana. Her prints alone sell for thousands of dollars. At home, she is the sole breadwinner, with her parents and brothers carrying out specific roles in her business.
Being the main moneymaker in the house is a great responsibility, but actually when I paint, I just don't feel like I'm making money, I'm making a business, but it just feels like I'm having fun with the painting.
But Archiana's genius has made her family rich.
Since it's slow now and the economy's kind of a little flattened out, I probably do, or we do, I should say we, 50 prints a month. Now, a print is $1,800 U.S. dollars to $3,100.
On top of the $100,000 plus a month they make from prints, every so often they sell an original.
Well, the most originals are between $100,000 and $300,000. Our highest one sold is 175, and that was a challenge. That was the one with the horse in the middle of the pine trees with the snow. I'm a full 12 rancher down in Texas. We try not to sell the originals. You know, she has control because all of this you see here is all hers. So when she's 18, this is hers. I walk out of the picture and I do something else.
And the fruits of Akiana's labor? A new $1 million family home.
Jimmy, painting in this area here. We'll have her probably easel here. I don't know if an easel on this wall or easel on that wall. But we also gave her a little kitchenette where she'd be able to have her daily coffee or tea, wash her brushes.
But is this a normal childhood for...
Hi, it's Dr. Mark Rosenberg. I used to be the director of the Walter Reed Emergency Department, and I'm...
A 13-year-old girl.
If a normal childhood is to sit in front of television and just be on cellular phone for 3-4 hours a day, I don't know if that's normal childhood. I consider a normal childhood being able to serve other people, to help other children, to enjoy what you're doing, to be together with a family.
Yeah, I agree on that. I got nothing to add to that one. She's not missing out a thing.
A self-trained genius is about to push himself to the limit.
I'm going to try to break my world record at speed cards. I'm going to try to memorize a single pack of cards in sometime faster than 26.28 seconds.
Sorry.
But things aren't going quite to plan for the UK memory champion.
Pushing it too much in the middle, I sort of lost track of all the images.
Ben has done this before. He's very experienced. His current record is around 26 seconds, and we're very much hoping that he can push it down and give us all a tremendous shock.
Ben gets a second chance.
Can you bring your back to shuffle cards?
Thank you very much.
You're on for ready, go.
Ben hopes to have memorized the pack in less than 24.68 seconds. But to prove it, he must now arrange a separate pack of cards in the exact same order.
Okay, your three-four time starts now.
To decide it, the two packs must be compared card for card.
Wasn't he, Andrew? It is just about exactly the kind of time I was hoping for.
Oh, that was amazing. I mean, my God, he's broken the 4-minute mile for the break.
We started out with a puppy teaching a lesson to a Maori who was holding a microphone over a necklace owned by Nassim Hamed, who was using a pair of tongs to hold a bag of sherbet, pouring it into a sieve.
It's an objective test of how fast it can be done. And in that sense, it's unbelievable.
In front of an auctioneer who was selling a tentacle which was growing out of a superhero in a suit of armour who was planting a flag in my dad's old garage.
Simple as that.
In 24 and a half seconds.
In Israel, it's 9 p.m. on a Thursday night, and 10-year-old musician Ariel Lanyi has a gig. At the tender age of 7, he branched out onto the jazz scene.
This gig is supposed to start at 9:30, which it probably won't, so it's that close to 10. It'll probably go until about 11:30. By the time he's going to get home, it'll be midnight. That's obviously not a good thing. But if a kid plays jazz, and if he wants to have an audience, he's going to get an audience at 4 p.m.
Thank you very much. This is Uncle Jones.
This is Ollie Rowe.
But can a child of 10 handle the strain of such a late-night gig? Continues, the late night starts to take its toll.
How to ease an irritated prostate in 3 easy steps. Number 1, eat chocolate, but not.
Ariel decides to persevere. It's now 10:30 p.m.
How did I play? I could do better. You know, I was very tired. We're going out to improve.
We're going out to improve?
He's not free. I know it's flopped.
What?
I know it's flopped.
In exactly 6 weeks, Ariel makes his European debut at a jazz festival in Italy. Could it be too much too soon? Getting the balance right between protecting and encouraging a gifted child is incredibly difficult. But in Singapore, Valentine Corley is determined that his 8-year-old son, Aynan, reaches his full potential.
This process is the result when a molecular key fits into a correspondingly shaped molecular lock. The key can be a relatively small molecule circulating in a body fluid, whereas the lock is usually a large molecule known as a biological receptor that is often found embedded in a cell membrane.
Aynan Corley's love of science was spotted when he was 6 years old.
We discovered that he was interested in chemistry when he was at his aunt's house. He found a chemistry book and he was reading it. And his aunt saw him reading this and said, Aynan, you seem to understand that. And he said, yeah, I do. And so she went away and got an exam paper, gave it to him, O-level exam paper, and he answered the questions correctly.
Aynan taught himself chemistry on the internet, and at 7, passed the O-level exam. Now, his father is battling to fast-track his academic career.
Yehudi Menuhin without a violin is not a violinist. He's a could-have-been. And the same applies to any of these children. If they don't get the opportunities they need, then all you've done is wasted their life and wasted the contribution they could have made to society.
Tell me why I can't climb. The weight and the pressure.
Daddy can't climb because he is so heavy. If he steps on here, he will ruin his feet. Because his weight accepted on a small area will cause a lot of pressure. He weighs 111
kg. And the surface area is roughly how much?
A square inch.
Can you imagine what would have happened if Leonardo da Vinci had never been apprenticed to an artist? None of his work may have happened.
To put a child like that in an ordinary school is a kind of abuse. From his perspective, school is in slow motion, which is how he described school to me one day. He said to me, the only thing I like about school is my friends. So he does have that, but the actual lessons don't give him anything at all. They cannot.
Although Ayman must continue attending primary school, Valentine has arranged for him, aged just 8 years old, to also study chemistry at degree level.
It's only the third year students here get to do the experiments because they have gone through first and second year training. But for Aina, he just comes in as if he's gone through the first and second year training already. He basically knows what to do.
If I increase the concentration of nitrogen, what would happen?
Reaction.
Very good. Reaction would go to the right to reduce the concentration of nitrogen according to the Chatelier's principle. If I increase the concentration of chlorine, what's going to happen? Cholera will shift to the right.
There's a mind of an 8-year-old, but the intelligence, which is roughly the same of ours, which is a bit stressful when you work with him.
Subsequently, you need to wash it with sodium chloride. Huh? Tell me why we need to do this. I'll leave it to you to find out, okay? Why do you need to wash with sodium chloride? Anybody can tell me now?
Go on. It aids layer separation.
Yes, it aids layer separation.
It's very obvious that he's a prodigy, and I think the people here are very welcoming of that. I had worried they might not be, but no, there's no worries at all.
But it would seem Aynan might not be the only genius in the family. His father, now a freelance writer, originally studied natural sciences at Cambridge.
When I was a child, I had many different gifts, but I don't think that they were given the full opportunity they needed to express.
Do you like ads?
I don't. That's why we created Ad Remover. It's a product that makes it so you never have to see another ad on any website ever again.
Is any of Aynan's ability inherited from his parents?
Yeah, I would say so. The funny thing is that his scientific interests parallel my own age for age as a child. He starts expressing interest in chemistry at 6. It's the same age I became interested in chemistry. Okay. So it's the same pattern, and yet we didn't guide him in this pattern. We just let him be, and he chose the same path. It's easy for a child in that position to end up frustrated, and having known that situation myself, I don't want to see him frustrated. I want to see him develop at his own pace in the areas of his interest and become the full human being he's intended to be.
Where are you from?
I'm from Davenport, Iowa.
And what's the area code there?
If you're a 3, it's 563. If you're a 7, it's 309.
Prodigious savant Kim Peek is a walking encyclopedia, having memorized over 12,000 books.
When did England become England?
It's been that way since 827 under Egbert, and then Athelstan and defeated the Danes at Brunanburh and united the country.
In what year?
In 933.
Good.
But suffering from brain damage since birth, Kim is a genius in need of 24-hour care. And at 82, his father, Fran, has his own illnesses to contend with, having recently had a melanoma removed from his face.
I have to brush his teeth and everything that's physical, We shower together, and I have to dress him after he dressed himself. I have to redress him. Everything we do together.
And provisions have to be made for when Fran is no longer here.
The last place I'd want him to go is into a group home or into an institution. My other son, about 6 months ago, came and told me that he would like to take his wife and move into our home where Kim's environment of books is, and he would take care of Kim just like I am.
And we're going to have 4 more great days together.
But for now, Fran is constantly at the side of his genius son.
The pathologist says everything's great. I just can't wear the bandage until next Monday. I have to go back and see him again. But everything, fine, no cancer, okay?
Yes, Dad.
Before becoming the inspiration for Rain Man, Kim had been a recluse, unable to even make eye contact with another person. But Dustin Hoffman told Fran to share Kim with the world. Ever since, he has done exactly that.
We've flown 1,992,000 air miles in 19 years. We've talked to over 4.4 million people in small groups. He's become something that he was never supposed to be.
Kim and Fran are on tour 20 days out of every month. Today, they've been invited to the University of Wisconsin to meet an audience of over 300 people, all eager to witness the genius of Kim Peake.
We'll start with an easy one. What day of the week was March 20th, 1979?
A Tuesday.
Okay. And I was born on March 12th, 1933. What day of the
Sunday.
Week?
All right. You're 75 years old.
Unfortunately, that's right. Sometimes people look at savants, whether it's a musician or an artist or a memory giant, sort of putting them on display, so to speak, and, you know, can you stump the genius kind of thing? And that's not what this is all about. It helps them. It's a form of therapy, if you like. Part of that is what we call training the talent, and that's really what the treatment of savant syndrome is to find the talent and run with it.
Although Kim is unable to hold a simple conversation, he has now interacted with millions of people at events like this, all on a non-profit basis.
What was the best picture in 1961?
West Side Story. There's a place for us. Leonard Bernstein wrote the score in 1957. Thank you.
When did Shakespeare write Romeo?
1595, but Leonard Bernstein wrote the score in 1957.
I'm very familiar with the literature through the last 125 years, and there's never been a Kim Peake, and I don't know if there would be another.
What are you singing, Kimmy?
That song is called The Birch Tree.
Vicenza, Italy, and 10-year-old musician Ariel Lanyi has been invited to make his European debut at a prestigious jazz festival, but he's feeling the pressure.
It's a big gig.
Okay. So right now, what matters is to put a smile on your face. A non-nervous smile.
Did you know there is 1 5-word question you should never ask a woman if you want her to sleep with you, become your girl?
This is a real jazz festival with big names, and he's playing alongside known people, so he's very, very nervous.
We just hope that he will revive before the concert.
Later that evening, an audience of jazz aficionados gathers to watch Ariel and jazz partner Jean-Claude Jones.
You know it's better. We practice with the metronome, and we're more together. And we drop the key.
That's it, together.
sono felice di presentarvi Ariel e Jean-Claude Jones.
In the wings throughout. This time, Ariel's a success.
Fantastic. I never thought that a little child like him could do something like that.
A genius, more than a genius, I think. I was just surprised. How do you say in English? That goosebump? I had a goosebump on my arms.
Thank you. Go, go, go.
Good.
When a child prodigy stops being a child, then the question is he, does he have the wherewithal to be a bona fide artist or not? And if he doesn't, then he can be a very happy amateur. If he doesn't follow a career in music, he'll probably have to follow a career in something else. And it will have to be his decision, ultimately. It will not be ours.
That was Superhuman Geniuses, Only Human. Now, I don't know if you will ever hear some of these individuals again. But every now and then they come along, and they provide us with a lot of enjoyment, entertaining mix of human interest stories and pop the science. Super Geniuses explores people with incredible mental knowledge and strength, and those are the kind of people that we've read about, going all the way back to Michelangelo and his creation of King David, Sistine Madonna, you know, the artwork that he did on the ceiling, and just continually of all of the various kinds of things that happened during that Bruno period. Then you had, you know, you can go on and on and on and talk about Mozart by Beethoven and Bach. Handel and all of those particular individuals all were geniuses, you know, some who could create things in a matter of minutes. Mozart, when people looked at his writing, he never made a mistake in terms of writing his music. It was always written and never duplicated or had to go back and change anything mathematically. It was structured beyond approach. And you find that same thing in a lot of other geniuses that came along, such as the incredible Miles Davis, who, when he put together the album, the jazz album, which is considered to be the foundation for most of the smooth and jazz today, wrote on a couple of scraps of pieces of paper with him and the people who played along with him besides, you know, it just goes on and on and on. And here we have a whole new set of people. I thought in order to conclude the show, I have about 10 minutes left. I wanted you to hear something about what nobody ever told you about Moses. Let's see if we can pull that up.
There's one ancient Vietnamese dish you can eat before jumping into bed with a girl that can boost your drive.
As a nurse.
The canonical scriptures skip from Moses' infancy to his young adulthood, leaving a lot of gaps concerning his life at the Pharaoh's palace to be filled in by popular imagination. The Jewish Encyclopedia records one of the best-known legends of the child Moses, which involves him snatching Pharaoh's crown. According to the legend, three-year-old Moses is sitting at the dinner table when he grabs the Pharaoh's crown and puts it on his own head. The Pharaoh's soothsayer worries that this is a sign that the child is the prophesied future liberator of the Jews in Egypt. Fortunately for young Moses, one of Pharaoh's counselors is actually the angel Gabriel in disguise, looking out for God's favorite boy. The secret angel proposes a test and sets out a piece of gold as well as a live coal in front of Moses to see which one he grabs, with the understanding that a hero of destiny and greatness would surely grab the gold. To make sure that won't happen, Gabriel supernaturally guides the child's hand to the coal. Being a baby, Moses obviously puts the burning coal in his mouth. Pharaoh's mind is set at ease that a prophesied hero would never do anything that dumb, and Moses' life is saved. Your familiarity with the life of Moses may mostly consist of the trip down the river and the parting of the Red Sea. What you may not remember, however, is that the inciting incident of Moses' role as prophet and deliverer of the people of Israel was a murder. Well, maybe a manslaughter, but either way, he killed a dude. In chapter 2 of Exodus, the young adult Moses witnesses an Egyptian overseer beating a Hebrew slave. Thinking no one can see him, Moses kills the Egyptian and buries his body in the sand. The movie Prince of Egypt makes this look like an accident, but it was definitely premeditated. Later on, when Moses tries to stop a fight between two Hebrews, one of them mentions the killing. At that point, Moses knows the jig is up and books it out of Egypt and toward Midian. In chapter 4 of Exodus, when the fugitive Moses encounters God in disguise as a shrubbery, he receives his call to action to become the great deliverer and lawgiver of the Israelite people. However, like any good hero, Moses tries to refuse this call, specifically noting that he's a bad choice because he's, quote, heavy of mouth and heavy of tongue. Much debate has ensued about what this description literally means, but the traditional explanation is that Moses had a speech disorder, most often understood to be stuttering.
And you shall free my people from Egypt.
Why me? A man clumsy with words.
According to some, this stutter was the result of baby Moses putting that coal in his mouth. But it has also been suggested that God specifically chose someone with a disability to be a spokesman so that all the glory would go to God and not to his human representative. Sigmund Freud, on the other hand, thought maybe the boy raised in Pharaoh's household couldn't speak Hebrew at all, while others theorized that he spoke with a heavy Egyptian accent or simply spoke slowly. The most popular explanation, however, is the stutter, with various other verses used to back this up. God helps Moses get over his hesitation by telling him his brother Aaron can do the actual talking part.
Would you believe a few simple changes in your diet can drastically reduce your joint pain and arthritis?
The strangest and most confusing incident in the Bible occurs in chapter 4 of Exodus, when Moses is on his way back from Midian to Egypt with his wife Zipporah and their son in tow. While Moses and his family stop at an inn, God tries to kill Moses, probably. These three bewildering verses contain a bit of pronoun trouble. Someone definitely tries to kill someone, and God trying to kill off Moses makes the most contextual sense. Anyway, Zipporah stops God from killing her husband by cutting off their son's foreskin with a rock and throwing it at God's feet, and then tossing out an amazing one-liner. Truly, you are a bridegroom of blood. The traditional understanding is that God was angry at Moses for not circumcising his son according to God's covenant with Israel. In this regard, Zipporah's quick and dirty bris saved Moses' life, but her bloody bridegroom quip is still hard to parse. Still, hard to ask much more of your wife than that.
Who makes you happy?
You do.
Moses is the most important prophet in Judaism, and overall one of the most important dudes in all of the Bible. However, most modern biblical scholars say that the Torah wasn't actually written by Moses, or by any single person for that matter. Instead, they say it's a composite of multiple documents that were edited together. And in the earliest of these documents, it seems like Moses' role was even more prominent and had to actually be toned down by communities who liked Moses' brother, Aaron, better.
He's my brother.
According to the Encyclopedia Britannica, in the earliest sources for the Torah, Moses did everything, and the only mention of Aaron was when he built the golden calf of the Israelites. The reason for this seems to be that the earliest sources were written by Moses fans, while later documents were written by those partial to Aaron, who featured him much more as Moses' helper and spokesman, as well as softening his culpability in the golden calf incident. Aaron's main role in tradition is that of the first high priest, which attributes to 90% of Aaron's references in the Bible. One of the things that most distinguishes Moses from other prophets is the personal nature of his relationship with God. In fact, the book of Deuteronomy says, "No prophet has arisen again in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face." According to the book of Exodus, this isn't a metaphor. After Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt and brought them the law from Mount Sinai, he and God would hang out and chat. Exodus chapter 33 says, "The Lord spoke to Moses face to face, just as a man speaks with his friend." It seems God was disguising himself in these instances, however, because Moses asked to see God's full glory. And even though God says no man can see God and live, he figures out a compromise for his best throw. God agrees to reveal his full glory to Moses in order to encourage and reward him. But since the unvarnished image of God is deadly to the human mind, God says that Moses would have to stand in the corner facing the wall, and after God walked by, Moses could turn around and look at God's back. According to...
Do you like ads? I don't. That's why we created Ad Remover. It's a product that makes it so you never have to...
Exodus chapter 34, Moses' constant close proximity to the face of God had an unintended consequence on the prophet. His face became so radiant that you might even say it glowed, and this change actually made some people for hundreds of years think that Moses had horns. According to Haaretz, the Hebrew word for ray of light can also mean horn. So it's possible to interpret Moses' shiny face as a horned one if you take the less contextually appropriate translation, which unfortunately it was when St. Jerome translated the Bible into Latin. European Christians used this version until basically the Protestant Reformation, with the most notable cultural consequence of this being Michelangelo's famous sculpture of Moses in Rome's Basilica of St. Peter in Chains, which prominently features two horns on Moses' brow, perplexing thousands of modern tourists daily. One of Moses' most famous roles is as the liberator of the Jewish people, leading them out of Egypt through 40 years of wandering the desert and into a land of milk and honey promised to them by God. As such, it might surprise people not deeply familiar with the story of the Torah that Moses himself never actually made it to the promised land. Of course, the walk from Egypt to Canaan is definitely not 40 years long. What happened is that when the Israelites got to the promised land, Moses' advance scouts reported that the land was full of giants, which made the people too scared to enter.
They have these walls preparing us for the promised land. If we are true to God, he will keep his promise.
For their lack of faith, God cursed them to wander until that entire generation had died, in hopes that the next generation would be more faithful. Once that time had passed, however, Moses found out that God wasn't going to allow him to enter Canaan himself. Instead, he died on a mountain within eyeshot of the Promised Land at the age of 120, and God himself buried him in a mystery grave. As pretty much the main dude of Judaism, naturally there's more stories about Moses than most other prominent figures from the Hebrew Scriptures. The incident of Moses' death is no exception to this trend. However, there is an apocryphal book that might shine a supernatural light on the mystery of what really happened to Moses. The Assumption of Moses is a story so crazy that it didn't make it into the Bible. The story goes that God hid Moses' body so that the idol-prone Israelites wouldn't begin worshiping their leader's corpse the way they had the golden calf. Satan, on the other hand, thought this would be hilarious, so he tried to steal Moses' body. God, however, had placed the archangel Michael as the guardian of Moses' grave, and when the devil tried to uncover the body, Michael rebuked him, forcing him to flee. Unfortunately, as interesting as this story sounds, we don't have much more information on this divine tug of war over Moses' corpse. It's generally understood that the oldest alphabet we can verify the existence of is the Phoenician alphabet. For some Greco-Jewish historians, however, it's obviously Moses who invented the alphabet and then passed his version on to the Phoenicians. According to the Jewish Virtual Library, a widely quoted fragment by the historian Euphonius claims, Moses was the first wise man, the first who imparted the alphabet to the Jews. The Phoenicians received it from the Jews and the Greeks from the Phoenicians. Also, laws were first written by Moses for the Jews. Inventing the idea of letters and the very concept of law is pretty big. The historian Artapanos went a step further, claiming Moses was the figure known to the Greeks as Musaeus, the teacher of the great musician Orpheus. And oh yeah, he was also the deity known to the Greeks as Hermes and the Egyptians as Thoth, the legendary figure who taught the alphabet, science, and mathematics to humankind. So he's kind of a big deal. Despite Moses' role in the development of three different major world religions, most modern scholars generally reject his literal existence as a historical person, though many accept that the legend of Moses may be based on certain details from the life of a Moses-like historical person. One reason that Moses is considered to be more legend than fact is that some details of his life can be seen echoed in the stories of a number of other legendary figures. The most prominent of these repeated motifs is the story of a baby Moses being rescued from the river. According to the Ancient History Encyclopedia, the Mesopotamian king Sargon of Akkad wrote a fiction-heavy autobiography in which he related that he was born the illegitimate child of a priestess who sent baby Sargon in a basket down the Euphrates River, where he was rescued and eventually became a conquering king. Likewise, the story of the Hindu hero Karna and even the Greek story of Oedipus follow the same basic pattern.
Well, I don't think we're going to be able to go ahead and finish this, but it's not that much more. In any event, you've been listening to Getting It Done with Dr. Walter Dean, presenting information, first of all, about super geniuses in the form of children and adults that are still living with us today. God-given talent. Also, a brief little synopsis about Moses. Many of the things that you know, but some things that you probably never heard about before. And hopefully you'll have an opportunity again. Today is Friday. You'll have an opportunity to listen to our show again on Monday at 5 o'clock. This has been Getting It Done with your host, Dr. Walter Dean. Have a good day.